Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the Oregon Employment Department for our regular media briefing. A couple of quick reminders before we get started. This call is being recorded, and we will send it out after the briefing. You will be called upon to ask your questions in the order you RSVP'd after we hear from David. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. If you're joining us via phone only, to unmute yourself, make sure to hit *6. If you have any technical difficulties or you're unable to ask your questions, please send us an email at oed_communications@oregon.gov. I'd now like to turn it over to David Gerstenfeld, Acting Director of the Oregon Employment Department.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for joining me this afternoon and for your flexibility as we've shifted over the past couple of weeks from doing live briefings to some written updates and now back to live briefings again. And after that two-week break, we do have a lot to talk about today. So I'll jump in on probably one of the topics on everybody's radar, which is the two-week freeze throughout the state of Oregon. And we certainly know how difficult a time it is for Oregonians, whether they're filing for unemployment benefits now for the first time, if it's somebody that needs to restart a claim, and certainly for many people that aren't seeking benefits. We really want everybody to know that we're here for them and that we're ready to get benefits out as quickly as we can to everyone that is eligible. We are in a much better place now than we were at the start of the pandemic to do that. We certainly are still sprinting to get everybody all of the benefits they're eligible for and doing that as quickly as possible. We're working through those people whose claims need adjudication, for instance, and focused on getting waiting week benefits paid to people. Those efforts aren't stopping. And while those efforts aren't stopping, we have made a lot of improvements over the past 8 months that put us in a much better situation now to deal with an increase in claims. We have much stronger infrastructure that includes two new contact centers with equipment and just overall bolstering of our systems. We've streamlined a lot of our internal workflows and we've increased automation so that we can handle more work more quickly. We've increased our communication with people that are seeking assistance in a number of ways, everything from adding more phone lines, language access lines, increased email communications, active social media, a mobile-friendly website available in 16 languages, and one of the key things is the Contact Us form on our new website that is really the best route for people to use to contact us if they need assistance with their claim. We have more user-friendly ways for people to file for benefits online. And probably the most significant reason that we're in better shape now is because of our employees. When the pandemic first hit in early March, we had about 275 people handling all aspects of all the different types of claims we were getting throughout the state. Within weeks, those employees had a record number of claims, hundreds of thousands in front of them that they needed to try to process. In a matter of weeks, we hired people very quickly. We gave them some training so they could start working on those claims. But processing those claims can be complicated and time-intensive, and the process to get them fully trained can also be time-intensive. At the same time, we redirected hundreds of employees that had other work in the agency to instead focus on getting those claims handled. Today, by contrast, we have over 1,200 people that are working on claims. That's in addition to the about 300 adjudicators doing that specific body of work, and that's up from the 80 that we had approximately at the start of the pandemic. And these new employees that we have that will be handling the anticipated influx of claims have received a lot more training since the start of the pandemic and have gained a huge amount of experience working with all different types of situations over the past several months. So somebody who's filing a new claim now or restarting a claim is not going to the back of the line behind people whose claims are in adjudication. That adjudication is a different body of work with different dedicated employees focused on it. Those adjudicators are going to continue doing their work, and I'll update you in a little bit about our progress. We have other employees focused on handling the new claims and on all the ongoing claims that people continue to file. Besides that, we've also been working proactively, and we are going to have the National Guard joining us at the end of the month to again assist us with processing claims as this pandemic emergency continues. We're continuing to work on new approaches and tools to make it easier for workers and employers That includes a new form on our public website on the employer section that employers can use to give us information when they're unfortunately having to lay off groups of employees at once. We are seeing the number of claims being filed go up. Most of that are not brand new claims from people who haven't filed before. Most of what we're seeing are people who did receive some benefits earlier in the year, unfortunately now needing to resume claiming benefits. For those people, and we anticipate that most of the new claims that we see will be in that category, they don't have to start from scratch with filing a new claim. Instead, they're restarting the prior claim that they had. And some of the changes that we've made since the pandemic started means that that can happen automatically for most people. So for most people, they're going to be resuming claiming benefits, and they should go to our online claim system and select Restart Your Claim, which is the 8th button down. For most people, they'll be able to do that themselves. They'll restart the claim, and the automation that we've put in place will, over the next couple of days, allow them to just resume making their weekly payments or weekly claims for benefit payments as they had in the past. There are some situations where it does require intervention by our employees for those claims to be restarted. So if somebody tries to restart their claim online and they get a message saying that they need to contact us, or if they do restart their claim online and a couple of business days later it doesn't look like it's being resolved appropriately, in those situations, people should use the Contact Us form on our public website to let us know about the situation. We're monitoring those and responding to those quickly to take any extra steps needed to restart claims. We do have more information on restarting a claim or on moving to a new benefit program if people have exhausted a benefit program they were on previously. So if somebody goes to our public website, unemployment.oregon.gov, we have a box at the top that has information about those topics. For those people who may now be needing to file a claim for benefits for the first time, we also have the eligibility quiz on that website that can help people know which program to apply for and which application to complete. And for any questions people may have, we encourage people to visit that website, to use the search. We have a lot of good information there that we update regularly. And if people do need to get in touch with us, well, we are continuing to improve the phone wait times. The most convenient way for people needing assistance is to use the Contact Us form. That way they don't need to try to get through on the phone. That's available just about all day, and it lets us be more efficient with responding to those inquiries. Wanting to shift topics a little bit, our focus from the beginning has been on getting everybody all of the benefits they're eligible for as quickly as we can, and we've been taking all kinds of actions to do that. Unfortunately, there are some situations where after somebody has received benefits, we later determine that they do not meet the legal requirements for the benefits they received. Federal and state laws require us in those circumstances to tell people about the situation and to try to recover those benefits. Those laws that require us to tell people when this situation arises is part of the overpayment process, but what it does importantly is it lets people tell us if they think that that is not a correct decision, and it allows them to challenge that by requesting a hearing, and an independent administrative law judge reviews the situation, and if they tell us that the person is eligible, then we're happy to make that adjustment and those people can retain the benefits. Importantly, we go beyond that minimum required step, and we try to review those hearing requests when they come in, even before it goes to an administrative law judge, so that if we get new information with the hearing request where we're able to see that the person really is eligible for benefits, we can amend our decision and resolve the situation more quickly. We do understand what a very difficult situation so many people are facing, and we are being as flexible as the law allows us to be with these required processes. We've been talking for quite some time about the waiting week and the fact that the governor did waive the waiting week, and we've been working to try to get those payments out to people. Our most recent estimates had been that we were on track to start making those waiting week payments by the end of November. I'm excited to announce today that we are not only still on track, but that we are in active testing now, and we are now pretty confident that we'll be able to begin making those benefit payments to people for the waiting week before Thanksgiving. What that means is that we'll begin making those payments to people who received waiting week credit on a regular unemployment insurance claim between the weeks of March 8th of 2020 and January 2nd, 2021. That's the time period of this emergency during which the waiting week can be waived. People who received waiting week credit during that time period will receive their regular weekly unemployment amount. For people whose waiting week credit was between March 29th and July 25th, that's the time period that the FPUC program was in place, so those people will receive the additional $600 FPUC payment. People whose waiting week credit was between July 26th and September 5th, that's the time period covered by the Lost Wages Assistance, or LWA, program, so those people will receive the additional $300 LWA payment for that week also. For people whose waiting week was during the March 8th through January 2nd time period, but not during the time period covered by the FPUC or LWA programs, while they're not eligible for those other benefit programs, they will still receive their waiting week benefit payment, and those people don't have to do anything to contact us about it. We know who received the waiting week credit, and we're working through processing those. And we know that once we start issuing those waiting week payments, most people will see those payments automatically through their regular payment method within a few business days. Unfortunately, not everyone will get their payments that quickly. Because of various complications with claims and all the different programs that exist now, we estimate that about 25% of people who ultimately will receive waiting week payments need to have some additional manual work done on their claim before the payment can be issued. For example, people who are currently receiving extended benefits under either the EB or under the PEUC program, or people who are receiving work share benefits, their claims will need to have some manual work done. We are working through exactly what that will look like. We are confident that most of those payments will also be issued by the end of December. Some of the most complex ones, it may take us through the end of January to complete making all of those manual payments. We are working right now on how we can get all of those payments done as quickly as possible, though, and we'll provide updates as we learn more. We have teams of people that are ready to work on those manual payments, and they are focused on getting that work done as quickly as possible. I will point out that this comes at the same time we're dealing with the anticipated increase of new claims, both because of the two-week freeze and also because this is the time when we normally start to see a seasonal increase in claims filing. So the manual part of the work that we'll need to go into getting some waiting week payments made may impact how quickly we're able to get other work done. But we're redeploying our staff as needed, and we're monitoring things very closely. I already talked about some of the things that we've done to be prepared, to automate, and to more quickly process new claims that are being filed. And those will be incredibly helpful, but we are dealing with these competing priorities. We're watching it closely, and we have become very adept at managing these competing priorities. And to be clear, this will not impact the adjudication work, which is being done by a different group of dedicated adjudication employees. I'll reiterate that people do not need to do anything to get their waiting week payment. They don't need to call us. This is a situation where even if their claim requires some manual processing, we are working on that, and people don't have to do anything additional in order to receive the payment. We will share more information as it becomes available, like how many people we expect to receive a waiting week payment, and updated estimates on the number of claims that will require manual processing and when we think we can complete all of those payments. I do want to extend a really big thank you to our IT and unemployment insurance employees and so many other people here at the Employment Department who have been working nonstop incredibly hard to provide benefits to Oregonians and to make these programmatic changes. Their dedication to public service, their sacrifices and creativity has been invaluable in helping us get years worth of payments out to people during this pandemic. Last Friday, we announced that for calendar year 2021, Oregon's payroll tax schedule will move to Schedule 4, the equilibrium schedule. We have mailed employers their individual unemployment insurance tax rates, but if an employer has not received that notice by this Friday, they can contact us by sending an email to OED underscore taxinfo_user@oregon.gov. We also have a phone number that people can call, 503-947-1488. Although due to projected high call volume, we're strongly encouraging employers to contact us by email. We've also shared that there are a few reasons for this being such a modest increase in the tax schedule, even though the unemployment insurance system is facing an absolutely unprecedented demand for paying benefits. That includes that many of the benefits, the majority of them, in fact, that are being paid during this recession have been federally funded, created by the Federal CARES Act, and that the time period of this recession only accounts for about 8% of the time period that we look at when computing employers' experience ratings that is used to determine their tax rates. But really the main reason for this being a comparatively modest shift in rates given the unprecedented demand for benefits is the health of Oregon's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, which kept Oregon afloat during the Great Recession and is likely to remain solvent through the current recession as well. This is thanks to the longstanding statutory formula that keeps our trust fund solvent, saving employers money. Our fund is one of the healthiest in the nation, and it stands in direct contrast to the 21 other states that have already borrowed over $41 billion just to pay regular unemployment benefits, and we anticipate that even more states will have to borrow more money going forward. Borrowing money leads to higher costs for employers, and we're confident that that will not be the case here in Oregon. While employers in borrowing states will see additional unemployment insurance taxes and other costs, Oregon employers have actually saved $685 million in payroll taxes over the past decade through the interest earned on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. What that means is that in borrowing states, employers pay more than a dollar for every dollar of benefits that goes out. They're repaying the dollar of benefits, and they're also paying borrowing costs and frequently also having increased federal payroll taxes. By contrast, in Oregon, employers are only paying about 80 cents on the dollar for each dollar of benefits being paid out. Again, that's the result of our solvent trust fund and the very solid statutory formula used to fund it. Without that trust fund formula that let this interest accrue, we would be in a higher tax schedule for next year. In terms of the unemployment rate, last month, the unemployment rate did continue to improve, and Oregon employers continue to add jobs to non-farm payrolls. The construction sector had the largest monthly job gains. Yet in Oregon and for the United States as a whole, the pace of recovery remains significantly slower now than it was during the summer, and that's before the increased spread of the coronavirus. Oregon's unemployment rate dropped to 6.9% in October, down from September 7.9%. For the last few months, the unemployment rate in Oregon has closely tracked with the national unemployment rate. We are in a recovery, but despite being in that recovery and having these positive signs, we've only regained about half of the jobs that were lost in March and April. And importantly, that recovery has not been felt evenly. Communities of color and women continue to be disproportionately hurt by this recession. We have a lot more information, details, and data that is available on the unemployment outlook and on job growth throughout the state and broken down into different areas at qualityinfo.org. A couple of other updates. We've been sharing progress on our focus adjudication work. On September 30th of this year, we shared that there were about 52,000 people at that time whose claims were in adjudication, and we were working to resolve those. This week, of that 52,000, there's about 22,300 remaining with claims in adjudication, and we continue to focus on that work as quickly as we can. I had previously shared a deadline for filing for disaster unemployment assistance, and after that initial deadline, we were able to get an extension from the federal government to allow Oregonians more time to apply for DUA benefits as a result of the wildfires. The deadline that it was extended to is approaching, though, so next Friday, November 27th, is the last day for people to apply for disaster unemployment assistance. So far, under that program, we've paid out about $207,000 in benefits to about 136 people. Many, many more people were helped through our programs who were harmed during the wildfires, most of those people receive benefits under the other programs that we administer. Anybody whose employment was impacted by the wildfires, who is not currently eligible for any of our other benefit programs, if they have not already applied for DOA, they should do so. And they should do that very quickly because of that looming deadline. It's available for people in Clackamas, Douglas, Jackson, Klamath, Lane, Lincoln, Lynn, or Marion counties. And we have more information, answers to frequent questions, and the application available at oregon.gov/employee/disaster. We have another unemployment insurance webinar coming up. It will talk about the extended benefits program and about some of the programs that are coming to an end at the end of December. That webinar begins at 1 p.m. on Thursday, November 19th, and you can register for that webinar and see prior ones at unemployment.oregon.gov/webinars. We also have been doing outreach regarding the Paid Family and Medical Leave Insurance Program. We've been conducting virtual town halls with one this Tuesday focused on small employers. Our next town hall will be on Tuesday, December 8th, this one 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., and it's going to focus on self-employed people and independent contractors who may elect to be covered by that Paid Family Medical Leave Insurance Program. This will include talking about contributions and benefit amounts and how to elect coverage under the program. People can watch a recording of recent town halls and register for upcoming ones by going to oregon.gov/employee/PFMLI and clicking on town halls. And to share some numbers about the benefits that we've been paying, from March 15th through November 14th, we've paid out $5.6 billion in benefits. That means that we've paid out more in benefits over the last 8 months than we paid out in the prior 9 years added together. During that same time period, we've had more than 605,000 claims for regular unemployment insurance, compared to under 94,000 claims during that same time period last year. And even with starting to see an increase in new claims being filed, we continue to process and handle the large majority of those new claims very quickly. We've paid about $339 million to 75,000 people under the PUA program. And the WorkShare program continues to be caught up. We have over 1,600 businesses that are using WorkShare, and that covers more than 66,000 employees. And I do want to remind businesses, especially with these changing economic conditions, that if they're potentially facing layoffs, the WorkShare program may be an option for them to avoid having to do that. And we have more information available about this program at OregonWorkShare.com. And I really want to thank everybody for joining us today and for all of your work and help informing Oregonians about what they can do and what they should expect regarding their unemployment benefits. We know that with the increase of COVID-19 infections across the state, more and more people will be turning to us for help, and we are absolutely committed to serving Oregonians in a compassionate and timely manner, and we stand ready to implement any new benefit programs that are authorized coming forward. And with that, I'm happy to try to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, David. I'm going to begin opening up the lines, and I will call on reporters in the order that you RSVP'd. I do want to note that we have a couple of more RSVP today than we have in the past, and so we'll do our absolute best to get through as many questions as we can with the time we have left. So first, I'm going to hand it over to Keaton Thomas with K2.
Hey, David. How you doing? Thanks for taking this. Good to be first, so that feels really nice. I guess first question, I just wanted to get out of the way. It's probably the least important, but I'm just curious, especially looking through some of the stuff with the economic revenue forecast, the state level, they mentioned basically benefits expiring at the end of the year. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on what are you expecting? What's your message to folks out there related to the fact that PUA and PEUC are set to end with really no replacement in sight coming up here at the end of the year?
It's certainly a really difficult situation, and we know that there's a lot of people relying on those safety nets. For PEUC, some of those people may be able to get extended benefits for a period of time. It depends on their individual circumstances, but unfortunately, a lot of those people won't have any safety net left that we're able to provide. And for people on PUA, unfortunately, they will almost all at that point not have any benefits available. So a couple of things that we're encouraging people to do is to really take advantage of our WorkSource centers, even though they're not currently open for in-person assistance due to the pandemic. They provide services virtually, and they can help people that are looking for work find places that are hiring. Even now, there are a lot of employers that are looking for workers, and some of them are having real difficulty finding workers. So we're here to help those people find employment wherever possible. That's probably the key. And then we, again, will point out that we're directing people to 211, which has lists of resources for available to people in different parts of the state that may be able to provide more assistance. We're really watching closely what happens at the federal level. The time frame is getting so short that we're concerned that even if something is passed right away, it would be really challenging, even with the more straightforward extensions, for us to be able to implement that without there being some break in coverage. So we're watching closely. We're communicating with our congressional delegation, with the U.S. Department of Labor, the National Association of State Workforce Agencies to stay informed.
And then the other question that I had for you, the two-week freeze starts right now. Can you give us any idea of any sort of estimate? You mentioned you're already seeing a spike or an increase in the number of people who are either restarting a claim or filing for the first time. What are you guys expecting just in terms of numbers?
Sure, and it's really hard to predict because this is almost exactly the time that each year we start to see a regular seasonal increase in claim filings. And between that, the unpredictability of the recession that we're in now, not knowing what that was going to do to our regular seasonal increase, and just not having a lot of historical data about how pandemics affect employment, there's a lot of unknowns. The projections that we've done looking at estimates for the industries and jobs most likely to be impacted, we're estimating that it may be about 51,000 people in Oregon that are impacted. Some of those may be people that are already filing for benefits, so they may have been working part-time and seeking benefits. Many of those are likely people that were not needing to file for benefits and will be restarting a claim or perhaps filing a first claim.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keaton. Next, we have Jonathan Hendricks of KPTV.
Thank you so much for chatting with us today. We've heard from a few people that they were having some issues filing in a claim specifically online. Is any part of the system having any technical issues that you guys are aware of, and any message to folks who may experience, you know, long wait lines on the phone or get an error message through the system?
So I'm not aware of any ongoing issues. Now, I mentioned that we're doing active testing right now with some of the work needed to get the waiting week out, and we're kind of constantly evaluating that. We're not aware of any technical issues. My advice, if somebody does run into anything, would be it could just be a temporary issue, even with just overall web traffic unrelated to our application process. So wait a little bit and try again. If that doesn't work and they're having difficulty, the best way for people to reach us is to use that contact us form on our website. That lets us get their question to the right person more quickly to get a response. And it means that they don't have to try to call in and worry about waiting on hold or having difficulty getting through.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Next, Claire Withycombe with the Statesman Journal.
Hi, David. Thanks for the time. I know you touched on this earlier, but I just wanted to make clear, is there anything that folks who are still waiting on their waiting week payment need to do in anticipation of receiving that payment? I wonder if you could just lay out very clearly what they should prepare for.
Sure. So I'll try to be really clear. They don't have to do anything. We know who received credit for that waiting week. So we are working through those. There's nothing that they have to do. Most of those people will receive that payment as soon as we are able to start issuing those payments before Thanksgiving. We did say that we know that there will be a fair number of people whose claims will require some manual work. For those, we'll be sharing information as we get a better idea of the timeline, but we'll be working through those absolutely as quickly as we can. And we do anticipate that most of those will be out before the end of the year.
And could you clarify what you mean by credit? I think many people might think of credit as an actual credit to their account as opposed to what it sounds like this is.
Sure. And the way that the waiting week works is that when somebody files a claim for regular unemployment and they meet all of the regular eligibility requirements, normally they can get benefits. But in normal times, that first week that they meet all of those requirements, instead of getting a benefit payment, they receive waiting week credit, which just means that it counts as their waiting week. That's something that people can check if they go to check their payment history. Through the online claim system, they should be able to see where they received that waiting week credit. And if they receive that, then that means that we're essentially going to be giving them that payment. I will make one observation that we have a lot of people that have been receiving benefits under the PUA program. And that program, and for some other people, they didn't have a waiting week. So this isn't a check that absolutely everybody in the state is going to get, but anybody who filed a claim and instead of getting a payment, got credit for their waiting week having been covered during that time period, they will receive payment now for that waiting week.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Devin Haskins with KGW.
Hey, with the new claims coming in, with the employment rate going down, do you expect that to spike or kind of stay the same with just this two-week pause?
Is there a question about what the state unemployment rate will do based on the two-week pause?
Yeah, just kind of the outlook going forward, what you guys expect.
It's really hard to predict. Normally what we're reporting on with that unemployment rate is the seasonally adjusted rate that takes into account that we call it winter workload, the normal seasonal increase in claims activity that we see. It's really hard to predict what we're going to see going forward. We anticipate additional claims being filed, but we don't know how that's going to net out. We were having internal discussions of trying to estimate what the impact of the pandemic would have on the winter workload, whether that normal increase would be flattened a little bit. So if it's a two-week period where we have some increased claim filing and then things go back to normal, it probably won't impact the overall trajectory of the recovery. What we're looking at right now seems to be that we are on that recovery path, but that it's a pretty slow recovery right now.
Devin, do you have a follow-up question?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is Lindsay Nadrich with COIN.
Hey, David. First of all, do people on WorkShare get the waiting week or do they not?
Yes, people on WorkShare who that waiting week requirement applies to them the same as it does under regular unemployment. So if they received waiting week credit, as I've been referring to it, well, on WorkShare, they will get a payment. Those claims are some of the ones that will require some additional manual work. So they're unlikely to get those payments kind of on that very first day when we are able to start making payments. But we have people ready to start working through those as quickly as possible.
Great. And if you could just reiterate for me, I know you and I talked about this before, but I keep hearing from some people who are in a situation where they have to pay back benefits. And the question I keep getting is they feel like somebody made the decision to approve that claim based on the information they had. It's your job to vet these before you give people benefits, so they don't understand then why now they're on the hook to pay them back.
Sure, and fundamentally, it's because there are federal and state laws that, while they give us the money to pay out in benefits, they also require us to follow certain guidelines, and in some areas we have a lot of flexibility. In some areas, we have little or none. The federal and state laws do require us to make sure that those benefits go to people who look like they're eligible, but that if at any point we learn that someone wasn't eligible for those benefits, that we follow that process I talked about earlier of giving them notice of that situation so that if they really weren't eligible, they can tell us and they have a way to challenge that decision. And also we're required to try to recover those benefits. And the way that that recovery takes place depends on a lot of factors, including which benefit program it was under and including what caused the overpayment. But I'll emphasize again, in the areas where we do have flexibility, we are being as flexible as we can be to absolutely minimize the impact on anybody who may have received benefits when we later find out they didn't meet the eligibility requirements.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Next is Mike Rogaway with the Oregonian.
Hey, David. Couple questions. I'm wondering about, you know, with the benefits expiring at the end of the year, do you have a ballpark estimate of how many people are on PUA and PEUC in Oregon? Even ballpark, you know.
I do, and I'm hesitating because I can't remember it enough offhand to feel comfortable sharing that.
Oh, that's fine. If Melanie wanted to email that later, that would be fine, or you did, that would be fine.
Okay, and I will say that the one complication that I said in understanding what that means is some of the people who are on PEUC may be able to switch over to the extended benefits program, but not everyone, and it's really hard for us to know how many of those people. We do know that it's going to be a large number of people in the tens of thousands that are likely to kind of have the safety net no longer be there for them unless there's further federal action.
Okay, good. Thank you. And then on the waiting week, I mean, we're looking at probably a minimum of a few hundred thousand there, right?
In terms of payments going out?
Yeah, a few hundred thousand people.
Correct.
And perhaps, I mean, maybe more like 500,000? What would be your guess?
We'll have a better idea once we're actually running the coding through. It will be in the multiple hundreds of thousands. Again, I'm hesitant to share kind of estimates when I don't have, one, our most current estimates in front of me, and some of these are very, very rough estimates that we're not able to get a real refined number until we're much closer to actually running the program to issue the payments.
Okay, and then I'm sorry to ask a third question, but hopefully it'll be quick. The folks who, some of these waiting week payments will spill over into 2021, it sounds like. You said before you had flexibility on the regular UI on that. What about, you know, if you were the $600 or $300 additional weekly payments, might some people lose that if that spills over into next year?
They will not lose that. So one is we want to be upfront, and it may take us into next year to get all of those payments made. We're still looking at every option available to get them paid as quickly as possible. If somebody is eligible for that $600, so if they received waiting week credit and it was during a time period that FPUC was in place, and for whatever reason we're not able to make that payment to them until January, they will still receive that extra $600.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Next is Tom Cusack with Oregon Housing Blog.
Hi, Dave. Hello. David, can you hear me?
I can.
All right, terrific. Thanks. I've got a question about the unemployment taxes and tax rates. I was looking at some Department of Labor reports, and the average tax as a percentage of total taxable payroll in the last couple of years was 1.94% and 1.69%. But I haven't been able to figure out for 2021 two pieces of information. Number one, what is the projected average tax going to be on the total taxable payroll, and what is the projected total taxable payroll for the coming year?
So I will definitely, unfortunately, defer again and say I don't have those numbers handy, but that's something that we can hopefully follow up with and get you those numbers, or if not, let you know why not.
All right, terrific. Thanks. I appreciate it. And there's one related question. I heard a presentation that you did online a while ago, and you mentioned that as part of the tax schedule, something like 40% of employers were going to be taxed at an average rate of 1.2%, And I couldn't figure out if that was 40% of the total taxable payroll or just the number of employers.
What I was referring to in that comment was the distribution of employers. So looking, the tax rate is assigned by employer. So we try to do some analysis to look at kind of how those different tax rates are spread out among employers in the state. And it is over 40% will be at the minimum tax rate of 1.2% for calendar year 2021.
But the, just to clarify, but that doesn't necessarily represent 40% of the total taxable payroll for all employers, right?
Correct. It could be either more or less depending on which employers are in that group.
All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Next is Peter Wong with Pamplin Media.
Hi, David. Thanks. Some of my questions have already been answered, but I do want to ask one question on your adjudication focus. Seems like you've passed the halfway point in whittling down the backlog from September 30th. Do you foresee making your target date on that focus? And has the process accelerated as the adjudicators do their work? Has it been easier to make those decisions and settle those questions as you go along?
We are moving through them more quickly. It's not a uniform pace, and when we find some things that let us go more quickly through certain issues, we're doing that. So there's also some kind of fits and starts where we may find a group of claims that have similar issues, and we find a strategy that lets us work through those much more quickly. So we'll have kind of a burst of progress in that particular type of issue that may not be something that we can then translate to all the other types of issues we're still working through. But overall, we have been on an increasing pace of getting through that work. What we had set as kind of the target of what we thought was a very aggressive increase of how quickly we were getting the work done, but we've been focused on doing it as aggressively as we can, was to have those done by the end of the year. It does look like we're on track. I will say that we're still I had to pause a little bit when you said, is it easier to get through them, because nobody is relaxing, and we are literally talking every day, pushing every day to find any way to get through them more quickly, because we know that this is so important to people, and we just want to get all of the claims adjudicated as quickly as possible so that we can then be on target for quickly handling all the new claims and issues that arise.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Peter. Next is Rob Manning with OPB.
My question is sort of one of scale here. I know that the governor and members of the state legislature have talked about finding some ways to provide relief to people that are going to be affected negatively by the upcoming freeze. And obviously with PUA going away, I mean, what is the capacity of the state to be able to step in and do something meaningful to help people, particularly people who are going to be in need of unemployment assistance, you know, and folks who, you know, maybe would otherwise benefit from PUA, but PUA is going away?
So that's a really big question. I can give you something that isn't going to be a complete answer, but is the information that I have that I think is kind of directed to it. There's a bunch of aspects of that. One is around the funding available to make the payments. Another is around kind of what the scale of the need is. In terms of the funding, I think we're all still hoping for congressional action that would provide a federal extension and funding of those benefits. In terms of what the need is, we've been comparing it kind of or I've been thinking about it at least a little bit as internal payroll. Prior to the pandemic, we were paying out, I think it was around $12.5 million a week in benefits. Right now, we're paying about $50 million a week. So if there was going to be some kind of replacement to provide benefits to people that are losing that, that gives a rough order of magnitude of what we're paying out now. not all of those benefits are PUA or PEUC or under those other federal programs, but a significant percentage of them are.
Okay. And I imagine, I mean, given the health of the unemployment trust fund, but the rules around it, I mean, is it even possible to expand, for instance, the use of unemployment benefits that the state has in its trust fund to stand up a program on its own like PUA?
Some types of expansion of benefit are permissible. It really gets into a lot of details, though. And I think maybe you can mute your microphone. I'm getting a little bit of feedback coming through. Some expansion of benefits to be paid out of the trust fund is possible, but you have to get federal approval to make sure it's consistent with federal rules. And there are some things that would be very difficult to do. One is making sure that kind of there's payments going into the trust fund to be used to fund the benefits. Creating a replacement for PUA would be particularly challenging because that federal program was created specifically to include groups of people that the federal unemployment system and all the state systems that stay within that federal set of requirements, it covers people that regular unemployment system is specifically designed to exclude. So the people that are self-employed, that can't get regular unemployment, the whole unemployment insurance structure really doesn't apply to them. So it would be pretty challenging, I think, to create a program that would comply with all of the federal requirements that would provide that same type of coverage.
Okay. Well, thanks for that.
Thanks, Rob. Next is Dick Hughes with the Hughesisms.
Thank you very much for doing these. First, I wanted to just clarify two things that you said. If people are restarting the PUA claims, can they use that restart your claim button? And when you were talking about it would be very difficult to get keep benefits flowing, even if Congress acted immediately, was that referring to PUA or all types of unemployment?
So to answer your first question first, yes, people that are on PUA that need to restart their claim because they weren't claiming for a while, they can restart their claim online, and we certainly encourage them to do that. That's going to be the quickest way for them to get their benefits flowing again. My comment about it being difficult to not see an interruption in benefits was really talking about PEUC and PUA. If there is just an extension of the time period to those programs and nothing else has changed, we can make those changes relatively quickly. But when I say that, it is a relative term. It still takes a lot of time to do the coding and testing to make sure that with all the intersecting layers of programs that we have in place right now, that it's not causing unintended issues for people. A lot of the discussions that are going on at the federal level would involve some change to the current programs. Some of those changes would be comparatively easy and quick for us to code for. Some of them would be very, very difficult and could take weeks or even months to implement. And that's where we're concerned that if something isn't done quickly, and if whatever is done really changes the current programs much, that even if there is a program there, that there may be some break before we're able to get those payments out to people.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dick. And our last questions today go to Kevin McNamara with KTVL.
I didn't really have a question. I was just kind of going to sit and watch, but that's okay.
All right. Well, we got through everything in time today. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you have another question or anything else you wanted to follow up on, please send an email to OED_communications@oregon.gov. We will follow up a little bit later today with links to the recording and some follow-up answers and information that was mentioned earlier. So thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.